It's Wisconsin Today. Yesterday, President Trump announced an alleged tie between acetaminophen, the active ingredient in Tylenol, and autism, and promoted a lesser-known medication that could be used as a treatment for the disorder.
The president said at a White House address that there is a relationship between acetaminophen and autism and urged people to avoid taking the medication.
You know, the way I look at it, don't take it. Don't take it. There's no downside in not taking it.
The Food and Drug Administration had previously said the agency has not found clear evidence that acetaminophen is linked with autism, but advises patients to speak with a healthcare provider.
Autism researchers have pushed back at claimed links between acetaminophen and autism. The Coalition of Autism Scientists says this claim is irresponsible and potentially dangerous, arguing that the science around autism is more nuanced.
Amy Van Hecke is a professor at Marquette University and director of research at Next Step Clinic at Centers for Independence in Milwaukee. Amy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we heard that statement from President Trump, don't take it. But an FDA statement that came out associated with this conference says, quote, to be clear, while an association between acetaminophen and autism has been described in many studies, a causal relationship has not been established, and there are contrary studies in the scientific literature. Okay, how do we sort it out? What do we know about acetaminophen and Tylenol and the risk of autism?
So it's a really good question. You know, I think in the autism research world, we're always trying to better understand what factors contribute to autism. What things can we point to? And I think there is this push for what I call reductionism of what would be the easy answer? Is there one easy answer? And unfortunately, as you mentioned, it's more nuanced. It's not going to be that easy answer. And I think the Tylenol studies, the real sort of issue there was that the earlier studies that did show a very slight risk, so I think it was a 5% increase in mothers who had taken Tylenol in pregnancy versus those who had not, the studies were not as well controlled as they needed to be and didn't really compare within a family. So things like shared genetic factors or children within one family with different pregnancies who did and did not get Tylenol. And once we include those kind of data, we see that relationship disappear. So this really speaks to the fact that likely it's not Tylenol that was the issue to begin with. It was a shared genetic issue. It was fevers. It was some other factor that had gone unmeasured in those early studies. And so as much as I think folks want sort of that simple answer, the real answer is much more nuanced, that there are more complex factors at work here, and it won't be this one simple, easy answer.
Right. And that correlation and causation question, I've seen it suggested, well, during pregnancy, women will take acetaminophen to control fever, to control pain. Maybe the thing that's causing that fever and that pain, maybe that's the thing that could be correlated with autism. I'm not saying it is, but that's one possible explanation here. Does that make it harder to tease this out?
It does. It does, because it's really what you're looking at then is a third factor, right? A third potentially unmeasured factor. And there's some recent evidence from a large population-based study in Japan that actually did look at those third factors and included this idea that, hey, if it's pain or fevers, what happens with genetic predispositions to that, right? And so they actually looked at autistic traits in parents and found that higher genetic loadings for autistic traits in parents was also related to more experiences of pain. So is that the factor that really is explaining any of this relationship that is there? So that was an interesting thing to kind of add to that. What we know is really that it likely is not the Tylenol. So the most recent studies really are showing that this relationship is sort of a proxy, I would say, for other things that are going on, more likely genetic things or environmental things that are common in those families.
All right, somebody's out there listening, they're pregnant, and they're looking at this and scratching their head, what do I do? It seems like the ultimate guidance from the FDA is, hey, talk to your doctor about taking this medication, which I think they say about any medication during pregnancy. Does that much change, really, for that pregnant woman right now?
I would like to say no. I would like to say to pregnant women everywhere to not be scared and to not drastically change what your doctors have been telling you to do. We do know, and this is the irony, I think, in this whole situation, is that fevers themselves, fevers during pregnancy, are a factor that contributes to autism in offspring. So, you know, if you're ignoring the fever and not taking Tylenol, trying to quote unquote tough it out, you're actually potentially getting in a more of a risk situation than if you weren't. Following that advice, there are the other painkillers that are out there are known to be much more dangerous in pregnancy than Tylenol. This was always, when I had my babies, it was, it was the safe painkiller. Of course, you don't want to take anything for an extended period of time. That's, indicating an underlying medical issue that you need to have addressed. But not to be so scared and to just not take it, that is bad advice.
I want to touch on another part of this announcement, this idea, this cancer medication, lesser known leucovorin, a form of treatment for autism. As I've seen the studies out there, it looks like, hey, for some people with certain manifestations and causes of autism, this thing shows promise. What do you read into this?
I would agree with that statement. So I think the key, though, is to understand that nuance of science, that this is a subgroup. And so when I look at those studies on leucovorin, what I see are subgroups who have this cerebral folate deficiency, which is actually very hard to measure at this point in time and kind of unreliable to measure. So it's not an easy test you can go get at Walgreens if your child has this. It might involve a spinal tap, for example. So that's invasive. And so for a subgroup, this might be an issue and this might be a treatment. But when we look at those studies and we see that, oh, they selected their participants in those studies based on having cerebral folate deficiency, and then when they supplement it, they appear to improve. Well, of course they did because they had it. So it's kind of this circular logic, and we don't know whether that applies to the general population of people on the spectrum. So I think it's emerging, I would say, for this subgroup, but we just don't know if this is a widespread effect that would be safe or helpful or potentially not helpful or not safe.
Amy, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amy Van Hecke is a professor at Marquette University, director of research at Next Step Clinic at Centers for Independence in Milwaukee. Been talking about President Trump's statements about autism yesterday.